I love them. I don't care what anybody thinks. I love the Beatles for them, and I'll always love them. Even when I'm 105 and an old grandmother, I'll love them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the She Loves You podcast, the podcast where we talk about the incredible women in the Beatles' lives, everyone from the wives, the girlfriends, the friends, the rumored affairs, and so much more. I'm your host, Natalia. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, welcome. Welcome to this kind of crazy, interesting little podcast I decided to create. It's been a while, I know. My last episode, I think, was like a month or 2 months ago, so I do apologize. And also, in advance, I do apologize for this crazy voice that I have right now, because I'm in the middle of kind of getting over a cold. So if I have to clear my throat every 5 seconds, just bear with me, everybody. And I might sound a little bit deeper, or I don't even know, probably not all there, but we're gonna go with it, because I don't want to ever stop making episodes for anybody, especially not myself, especially if I don't feel well. But I'm feeling fine. The cold was sort of a, you know, one of those colds that lasts maybe like 3 days or two and then just goes away. So not too bad, obviously. But yeah, I'm back with a brand new episode with a brand new lady. And, you know, this is sort of going to be, I guess, another one of my controversial episodes. We're kind of nearing our end of this first season of the She Loves You podcast, which our first season obviously was about the wives. And, you know, this is kind of going to be the second to last episode. So it's sort of a little bittersweet moment for me right now, in the sense that, you know, this is kind of nearing the end of this project that I started, at least the first season, but it's also a big accomplishment in a lot of ways. But I'm really interested in doing this episode because, you know, I think, you know, I've said before on the She Loves You podcast, we talk about these women in full. We will discuss their lives, the influence that they've had on, you know, a particular Beatle. And, you know, I do think that every woman's story is important to tell. I've never been the type that has been, I try not to be judgmental, because I think as people, obviously, we can come to our own conclusions and we can assume things. But I think, obviously, we get to a point in society, I think, where women are always constantly judged for whatever they do. I think it's time that we kind of step back and analyze, you know, why is that? Why is it that women have to sort of live to this standard to this day? You know, because it hasn't, you know, we like to think we're getting better, but we're really not. So on the She Loves You podcast, as I've mentioned, we tell these women's stories without judgment. We don't ever like to cast a bad shadow. We can have our opinions and, you know, we can certainly disagree with certain things. But here on the She Loves You podcast, I am bringing these women's stories to light, whether we fundamentally think that they were a good person or not, or are a good person or not, is really not up to anyone's, you know, judgment. We're not here to cast a bad light on anybody, and I would never want to do that, especially to a person's personal story, because I think a person's story is personal. But the reason I sort of put these warnings is because today I'm going to be speaking about a lady that is probably, besides Miss Yoko Ono, one of the most controversial women in Beatles history, or rather, you know, even in music history, if I'm going to be completely honest with you. But today I'm going to be speaking about the one and only Miss Heather Mills. Now, again, we are just going to be telling her story. I do not want to ever cast a bad judgment or light, but I will be speaking the truth. I will be speaking about what she went through, but I also will be speaking about also what other people have had to say, because I think it's important to sort of acknowledge all sides of a story. I never like to just be biased. But again, I will be talking about Heather with the most respect that I can, obviously. And again, this is not a bashing episode, because we don't like to do that on the She Loves a podcast. We love to be honest and talk about someone's story. So Without further ado, I bring you the story of Miss Heather Mills, and I hope we can all sort of just learn something, even if we think we know someone. I don't think we really do, right? So here we go, the one and only Miss Heather Mills.
So Heather's story really begins on January 12th, 1968, when she was born. She was born Heather Ann Mills in England, and her father was John Mills, and he was a former paratrooper, and Beatrice Mills, who was a housewife. So, you know, Heather had a rather, you know, from the ages of 1 to 5, you could say, she had a rather normal childhood. Her mother was at home, and her father would work. They were a very open family in the sense that they were big animal lovers. Heather often really remembers having lots of pets as a kid, like dogs and cats and whatnot. So she's always sort of been an animal lover in that instance. She had a few siblings, a sister and I believe a brother. She attended primary school and, you know, really, as I mentioned, had a rather normal childhood in all sense of purposes. Up until a point, there was a point where her life essentially really changed. And that was when Heather, she herself has claimed that when she was about 8 years old, she and a next door neighbor were kidnapped and sexually assaulted, which, you know, is a very scarring event in itself. Looking at it from the other side, of course, this neighbor went on to publicly state that no such event happened, and that she couldn't understand why Heather would make something up like that. But again, you know, as I mentioned, we're going to be looking at all sides of this story. So, you know, that was Heather's truth and that was the neighbor's truth. But she claimed that that sort of had a big effect on her from that time on. And another really big major event that happened in Heather's life was the leaving of her mother. So at the time, she was about 9 years old when her mother left to go live with a boyfriend that she, you know, was having an affair with. And it was very scarring for Heather. You know, obviously losing one's mother is never easy, but to lose her in such a way that is, you know, very heartbreaking, you know, because you obviously think that your parents can last and, you know, they're in love and happy, but, you know, life often has different plans, I suppose. So it scarred her for a bit there for a while, and she and her brother and sister ended up living with their father. And he was pretty much the primary caretaker in that situation, and, excuse me, I'm going to be clearing my throat this entire episode, but anyway. But yes, he became the primary caretaker of the family, and, you know, Heather has gone on to say that her father was not very present. He did the best he could, and that he could be slightly abusive, especially to their brother. And because their father was not such a present father and oftentimes wasn't a big provider, Heather would have to kind of shoplift with her siblings in order to be able to afford things or even eat most times, which is what she claims her sort of crazy childhood was full of. But later on, as I mentioned, on the other side of that, her father has denied most of these claims and has said that she had a relatively happy childhood and that he can't understand why she would make up, you know, such an interesting, weird story according to him. But, you know, I digress. Different sides, different, you know, different ways of seeing the truth, I suppose. You know, from that crazy sort of childhood, it left her a lot scarred. She had to go through a lot. And, you know, I think, as I've always said, the way that our childhoods turn out, you know, they'll sort of make us become what we end up becoming. As much as we like to sort of deny that and say that, you know, we could be better than what we were or what our parents were, I think, unfortunately, our psyche kind of always falls in line with, you know, what happened to us. But I digress. She eventually knew that she had to leave home And she and her sister Fiona went to go live with their mother because they sort of wanted another chance to be able to, you know, live with her, but also have some stability, really, because they were only teens. And, you know, according to her, there was really no stability with their father. So going to live with their mother and her partner at the time was sort of the best way of doing that. Their brother, he was a bit younger, so he ended up living with their grandmother, which would be sort of a more stable environment in the sense that he was young, so it would be much more stable. So Heather states that in her book, when she was about 15 years old, she essentially ran away from home, from, you know, her mother, from her family, and she decided to join a fun fair, which is like a circus, I guess you could say, and she claims that she, you know, got to a point where there was no money, so she had to essentially live in a cardboard box, which is, it's really interesting, right? Yeah. So she, you know, was so broke that the cardboard box was sort of the only way to have a place to go. And it was near Waterloo Station, and, you know, she was living there for months. But on the other side of that, the man that worked with her at this fun fair denies the claims and says that the real reason she, you know, joined this circus fun fair was because there was a man in the fun fair and she was dating him. So, you know, that's his side and her side. School for Heather, she says, was really not a priority. She wasn't really looking towards school in order to sort of figure out what she was going to do with her life. School was just not that priority. And her teacher made a statement and, you know, told her essentially, you know, you're not going to succeed in school. It's just not going to happen for you. I don't see you succeeding, which is really, really interesting, right, for a teacher to say that. Because you want to hope that your teachers will be there to sort of guide you and tell you all these things. But, you know, for Heather, it was just not her priority, and she realized that and ended up dropping out pretty early on. Her father ended up having another child with a girlfriend that he began dating, and a lot really changed, and Heather sort of had to kind of get on and, you know, keep going. And, you know, it was a pretty intense childhood and really intense early life to have to go through all of that, really, at such a young, tender age, truly.
So after all that turbulence, she ended up meeting a man who would become her first husband. His name was Alfie Carmel. They met in 1986. He was about 10 years older than her, so significantly older. But, you know, he made quite an impression on her. He was, I believe he had money. Not really sure who he was or what he did, but he had money in all intents and purposes, because he ended up supplying her with a lot of clothes and a lot of jewelry and especially a lot of plastic surgery, which really I suppose was in line with the fact that they wanted to create a modeling agency, and he wanted Heather to sort of be the star of this modeling agency. You know, unfortunately though, nothing really took off with the modeling agency. It was rather unsuccessful. you know, so she really didn't find a lot of success within the modeling agency that Alfie sort of wanted her to, you know, be a part of. But, you know, that didn't necessarily stop Heather. She ended up having a modeling career, and, you know, she left the agency for a bit and ended up going to Paris. You know, and she told Alfie, you know, I just need some more work, so I'm going to go to Paris and I'm going to get some, you know, more money because, you know, I need it. And for Paris, she actually did not really model for a lot of, like, brands or anything, but she actually modeled for a German sex education manual, which, you know, it sounds very, I don't even know what the word would be for that, but just very, really out there. So, you know, she modeled for that, and, you know, at the time, she was also sort of seeing the man who was running this magazine or whatever it was. So, you know, she was sort of, you know, she was sort of getting it on with, you know, him and whatnot, leaving Alfie back in London. But, you know, when she did return, she realized that, you know, she wanted to be with Alfie, so they ended up marrying pretty soon. But, you know, Alfie really wanted her to get better in the sense that he realized that she had an issue with sort of telling the truth a lot of the time. And I think, you know, the compulsive lying, I think, really came out of a need for her to have, like, some sort of reality in her mind because of all the things that she went through as a child and her, you know, upbringing and whatnot. So he essentially said, you know, you get the help that you need, you know, go to a psychiatrist, and I need you to understand that, you know, you have an issue with lying because you tend to lie a lot. And, you know, Heather really couldn't disagree because she knows that she lied a lot to Alfie and, you know, a lot about other things. So she ended up going to psychiatry for about 8 years. And she said later on that it really, really did help her. And, you know, they were married. They married in 1989. And she wanted a family. And she tried desperately to conceive. But she just couldn't. She would either have miscarriages or nothing would happen. So it was pretty difficult. Because, you know, I think any woman that goes through a miscarriage and, you know, it's just, it's very difficult, I would assume. I've never been through one, but I just, you know, I can't even imagine the heartbreak that you feel when you lose, you know, a baby, you know, something that's already in you. So, you know, she went through these two pregnancies, and as a result, the marriage was quickly crumbling. She would have various affairs, you know, but throughout it all, Heather sort of, you know, began to sort of see life beyond her life, and she saw that people suffered in the world, and it was sort of the beginning, really, of her charity work that would sort of, you know, last throughout the years and continues today. It was, you know, a moment also at the time when, you know, there was the Ethiopian War. And Heather did small things like help victims, but she would, you know, she even set up like a refugee crisis center. And it was small things like that that sort of inspired her to become this sort of charitable figure that she would become later. I think she really saw, you know, it really gave her a sense of purpose, right? To be involved with people that needed it the most. So charity sort of became her strong suit in a lot of ways. But unfortunately, with all that said, the marriage didn't last, and she and Alfie eventually divorced. And it was very hard on her, but at the same time, it was, in a sense, never really going to work out. And throughout it all, Heather continued with charity work. She suffered a lot of accidents, one that actually left her leg amputated, and she had to have a prosthetic leg. So, you know, she went through a lot of things within the time frame of all that, and a very sort of controversial life, but also full of reflection in a lot of ways. As I mentioned, you know, her charity work has lasted, and she's still going strong with the charity work. So in a way, I think her suffering allowed her to develop this compassion for people that you know, has lasted today and really, you know, hasn't ever died in a lot of ways. So, you know, after all of that, we get to the point where, you know, this incredible meeting happens between these two people that really changes so much of, I guess, what the public ends up, you know, thinking of Heather Mills. In 1999, this is approximately about a year after the death of Linda McCartney. Paul McCartney was at the Dorchester Hotel at the Pride of Britain Awards. He was presenting awards to fellow, you know, activists. And Heather Mills was also in attendance, and she was also presenting an award. And, you know, I believe Paul talks about seeing her and sort of being awestruck, you know, this beautiful woman, as he mentioned, and, you know, really, you know, thinking she was really, really pretty. And, you know, it was a year after Linda's death, so he was really in a state of still not really believing she was gone, but also, you know, just sort of going full into something that, you know, was a lot, in a lot of ways, too soon. But, you know, he was interested in the fact that she did so much charity work. And, you know, as a person that himself, that he did a lot of charity work and was a vegetarian, he and Heather sort of had that in common. They both loved animals and were very passionate about, like, animal rights and animal abuse, you know, charities and whatnot. So, you know, they kind of had that in common, and they got to talking at this event, and Paul really saw that she loved, you know, the charity aspect of all of it all. So he was very interested in donating to her own charities. And, you know, they started really just off in that sense. But, you know, with the talking and whatnot, you kind of get to a point where you start to like someone, right? So I don't think he expected it. I really don't. And I don't think she, in a way, didn't expect it either. But, you know, it kind of happened, and he really jumped into this relationship, and they both quickly, like, fell in love with each other. And it really happened in a really short amount of time. Of course, the public, you know, was a big part of this relationship, right? I mean, we can't deny that. The public's interest at large really became this relationship, and they took notice immediately because Paul and her were seen together a lot, and paparazzi and whatnot. So, you know, you kind of get that public interest aspect. And of course, this is, I mean, you have to remember, this is, you know, not really too soon after Linda's death. So, you know, of course the public was going to be, in a way, like, so invested in this relationship, because Paul had really had the model marriage, right, in rock and roll. So, you know, who's the new woman in Paul McCartney's life? You know, that must not be easy in any way, shape, or form, no matter who you are, right, no matter what your intentions are. So, you know, of course the scrutiny was going to begin at any moment, in a lot of ways. So they had their first public appearance together at Heather's birthday party. You know, he was there and was, you know, pretty happy to be there and be with the woman he was, like, falling in love with, you know. And by 2001, Paul had actually proposed. They were vacationing in a place where they had a lot of properties in, or rather, Paul had a lot of properties in, and it was a pretty quick engagement. Paul ended up giving her an engagement ring that was worth, I think, like, £15,000, which is crazy, right? Whoever can do the math and transfer that to dollars, or rather give me the sum of the dollars, well, that would be in dollars, then thank you. But, yeah, they had a rather quick engagement, and they married on June of 2002, so, you know, I take that back, it wasn't that quick of an engagement, rather a year, but it was a quick courtship, I should say. But yes, in June they married, in 2002, and this is precisely 4 years after the lovely Linda had passed away. So, you know, a little bit of time, but again, pretty quick in a lot of ways. They had a very big, elaborate sort of ceremony in Ireland, and really, you know, at the beginning of the relationship, it was a very sort of domesticity bliss life. Heather would, you know, state that Paul would bring her breakfast in bed, even if she didn't ask for it, and was a very sort of attentive husband, and, you know, all the things that you can think of Paul as being a husband, right? You know, very attentive and there for her. And, you know, it was, you know, she claims they were very much in love at that time. And, you know, he later on went to state, you know, I love her, and being in love has really helped me, and it's also inspired me to write a lot of songs. And, you know, kind of on his solo albums at that time, he was just writing and writing for Heather. You know, all these songs were just pouring out of him, and, you know, it was sort of just the equivalent of a little puppy that is so in love that you are so obsessed with a person that you just, you know, it could be writing poems, it could be writing songs, it could be, you know, bringing flowers to someone. It's just that sort of love sick stage that you're in, really. And for the few years in the early days, it was a very loving marriage in that sense. And in May of 2003, she announced her pregnancy. Her chances of getting pregnant were already sort of low after the experience that she had with her first husband, so she never really expected much. She didn't ever think that it would happen, and, you know, when it did happen, she was very happy, and Paul was ecstatic, and, you know, she was just in bliss, in complete bliss, and they were very, very happy. And on October the 28th, they had their daughter, Beatrice. And yeah, it was a very sort of happy moment in their lives, and they were very, very, very thrilled about little Beatrice's arrival. Throughout this time, though, this marriage, I mean, I think we all sort of know by now, it was highly publicized. It was, I think, one of the most publicized Beatle relationships, maybe besides John and Yoko. And even then, I think John and Yoko had a little more privacy to them. I think it's weird because on the one hand, you know, you've got them trying to be private, but on the other hand, they're constantly doing interviews and in the media. And, you know, Paul, I think, was just so in love at the time, and Heather as well. So, you know, I think they weren't trying to hide it. You know, they were very much out in the world saying we love each other, and went on sort of any talk show and even game shows, which is, you know, it's intense. But yeah, it was a very publicized relationship, and with the publicity comes the scrutiny, and it comes people really looking at you, and you're sort of in a fishbowl where everyone's looking at you. And you know, it's interesting because Paul, he was used to this. You know, he had been in this business for years at that point, so he knew what it was like to have the press and the public sort of looking at you and thinking like, okay, well, you know, what's wrong with them? Who are they? So, you know, this wasn't new to him, but I think to Heather it was, because she'd never really been a public personality. Sure, she might have donated to a lot of, like, big charities and whatnot, but she was never a person that was really public like this. So it must have been a little daunting, you know, because I think in a lot of ways, even if she was the one that was kind of putting it out there and was the one that was really trying to, like, publicize their marriage, I think it is still a daunting task in a lot of ways to put yourself out there. No matter what your intentions are, it's still very daunting. So in a way, it is interesting that, you know, they went through that together. But, you know, obviously things did not last, and it only got worse from there on out.
So, you know, this marriage, this relationship that Heather and Paul had is still really one of the most talked about relationships, I think, in Beatles history. Maybe for the wrong reasons, of course, but, you know, it is something that, you know, happened, and this divorce in particular was so high profile. I mean, I mean, obviously, most celebrities or, you know, whatever they do, music, movies, whatever, if you're in the public eye, right, your divorce is going to be amped even more. But this divorce was really just very, very amped up. And, you know, it must have sucked on both sides. Like I said, this is the She Loves You podcast, and we like to be as neutral as possible. We never, ever judge or pick sides. You know, obviously, though, this was a divorce that, you know, had money at large. Money was a big part of it. It would be weird to deny that, but, you know, money was a big part of this divorce. And, you know, it came at a time when I think it all just built up, and, you know, it all was bad. You know, nothing was good or worse or bad. It was all just bad. So around 2006, after some time of being, you know, sort of living apart and having problems, they officially separated. They decided that they were going to take time apart and really just wanted to move on with their lives. They did not want to be married anymore. Divorce was sort of in the cards, and it was probably the only option. You know, I think with any sort of big event that happens, I think that, you know, especially with family involved, and Paul had four kids at that point, and five, you know, now with little Beatrice, but, you know, I think it must have been very difficult for the McCartney children to have to witness their father marrying someone new, because I think regardless of whether you like them, you don't like them, it must be hard to have to see your parent move on, you know, even regardless of whether, you know, they divorced your mother or your mother has passed away or whatever the situation may be, I don't think it's ever easy to see your parent move on. And you know, there have been a lot of rumors and talk. Again, I do not know the McCartney children. I do not claim to know Stella. I do not claim to know any of them. But what has been reported and what the rumor essentially is that Stella really did not get along well with Heather. They were just not, they didn't see eye to eye. Stella was not really fond of her from the beginning and did not like the fact that she was marrying her father, which, you know, she has a right to think that, and that's totally within her right. If that is how she thinks, I don't claim this is the truth. I am only recounting what has been speculated and what the rumors are. Heather herself has, I believe, gone on statement to also say that Stella was a bit of the biggest critic of the marriage and was sort of the biggest critic of her from the beginning. So she caused a lot of heartache and, you know, a lot of disagreements and whatnot. Again, this is what she said. I am not saying it is the truth, so I don't claim any of this to be truth or not, but this is what Heather has said, which I think, in a way, I don't think that's fair to Stella. And in a way, if it is true, which I'm not saying it is, I think it must suck also to have, you know, your husband's daughter really just not like you in a lot of ways. So I think no one really wins in that situation. It's sort of a, like, we're fucked kind of situation, really. But yeah, and you know, I will say, though, I think a statement that I don't necessarily agree with is that during the divorce, Heather went on to say that Paul was rather abusive and I think at one point even, like, was physically abusive with her, which I don't, again, that's her truth, and I can respect that, but I don't necessarily believe that to be true. Paul's lawyer sort of brought up the fact that in the past she said that he was the most loving husband and would never, you know, put a hand on her. So it is interesting to see what her truth might be and, you know, what the truth might actually be. So it is rather interesting, but, you know, throughout it all, a sort of reunion happened with Heather's father. He, as I mentioned, was not really in her life for a while. But he was really actually proud of his daughter for making her case in court and really, you know, standing up for herself. So he wanted to sort of reconnect with her. And knowing that he had a grandchild, he wanted to really meet Beatrice. And even it says that Paul, you know, put his you know, everything else aside and was really there for Heather and Beatrice and had, you know, her father meet little Beatrice, and they were all there together as a family, which I think is, I think it's amazing on Paul's part, really, you know, throughout it all. And, you know, it's sort of a nice moment in the midst of the craziness and the crazy divorce and, you know, money, which frankly, I'm not going to talk about the money because I think you can kind of do that research on your own. I think money is sort of beyond the point. I mean, yes, does it suck that she asked for like millions? Yes. And does it suck that, you know, he had to pay a lot of alimony? Of course. I think alimony is probably the worst part of any divorce. You know, screw the actual marriage. The alimony is the fucked up part, you know, but Yeah, I'm not going to talk about the money. I think it's probably the most least important thing in all of this. But yeah, throughout it all, they got divorced, and again, like I said, it was very high profile, and it's still really talked about today, which I think is like just so interesting in like every way, shape, or form. You know, it's sort of like the high profile divorce we still talk about today, you know?
So Heather Mills is really never going to stop being this sort of controversial figure within the Beatles circle, fandom, you know, whatever you call it. But, you know, it's so interesting that I think like her and Yoko really stir up these feelings in people, and sort of whether you like them or not, you know, people will always have opinions. And I think that's, you know, the great thing about humanity is that we can have these opinions. You know, for me, it's more like it doesn't really matter what my opinion is of Heather Mills. I think she lived her life the way she wanted to and did things the way she wanted to. And, you know, in a sense, you know, loved a man that is worldwide known and had a child with him and influenced him on certain things. But, you know, that's her reality and that's her truth. You know, and to this day, Heather continues to strive with her charity work, and she's never really faulted in that sense. You know, and I think also, in a way, things happen for a reason, you know, and whether the marriage worked out or not, they have a child together, and that's sort of that important part of it all. And, you know, in a way, you know, it's sort of just something that happened in Paul's life, and it affected him better or worse, you know, it affected him. And I think, you know, that's sort of the way to look at it. I don't think we can even say someone is bad or not or good, because like I said in the beginning, I think people are more nuanced than that. I don't necessarily think that people are all bad or all good. I mean, given there are exceptions, there are horrible people in this world that should never ever be considered good in any sense, don't get me wrong. But I do think in, you know, cases like this, I think people are nuanced, and I think that everybody sort of has their flaws and their issues. But, you know, it's we live our truths, y'all. Like, we all live our truths. We live our lives. And, yeah, I mean, was it probably the best idea for Paul to get involved so early in a relationship? Probably not. And was that divorce just too much involved with money? Yeah. But, you know, it's part of life. And in a way, Paul, I think, had to go through an experience like this to kind of really get him on track, in the sense, because I think Linda's death, as we all know, has just affected him in so many ways that, you know, it's not surprising that he found someone so quickly, but it does suck. But either way, we do tell everybody's story here on the Shalipsy podcast, so Heather could not be an exception. I wanted to give her a more balanced look. I think that's what I owed to, you know, her in this episode. And I hope I did that. I hope we can all sort of see it that way as well. I mean, like I said, we can have our opinions, but I think we can look at someone fully to understand maybe why things happen the way they do. But I think Heather, you know, as I mentioned, she's still going strong with her charity work. And to that I say good, because any sort of charity is good charity. But anyways, this was a really, really great episode. It sort of gave me a chance to look at someone that is not as well liked, and I'm probably going to be doing that a lot from now on, because now we're kind of getting into this interesting territory with the She Lives You podcast. As I mentioned, we are coming close to our first season. This is going to be the second to last episode, which feels a little crazy to say. In a way, I feel really pleased that I've lasted this long and haven't bored you all to death, but I'm just really happy that we have almost gotten through The Wives, which I think was a great place to start and the essential place to start. But yeah, I'm really happy that, you know, you all have stayed and have been listening and supporting, because it really does mean the world to me. But I was really happy to bring this episode to you guys today, and I hope we can get a little more understanding when it comes, I think, to certain women in the Beatles' lives, because I think we should do that to every woman in our lives as well. Thank you guys so much for joining me on this really interesting episode of the She Loves You podcast. And our final episode, not our complete final episode, our final episode of season one of the She Loves You podcast will come next, and we will be talking about the wonderful and the last Beatle wife, really, Miss Nancy Chevalle, and we'll discuss all things her, and we'll also give it, I guess I'll give a short insight into what we can expect for season two, and some changes that are coming my way, and some more amazing guests that we will be having throughout the seasons, and I cannot wait to talk to you guys in the finale episode of season one. So thank you so much, and just thanks, guys. Thanks a lot.